Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against our depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. All right, I'm Scott Horton. This is the Scott Horton Show. My website is ScottHorton.org. Join up the chat room and hang out during the show with everybody. ScottHorton.org/chat. Also, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /ScottHortonShow. Okay. Next up is Alexa O'Brien, the independent journalist who's covered virtually, I believe, every aspect of the Bradley Manning trial this whole time. AlexaO'Brien.com, and that's O-B-R-I-E-N, AlexaO'Brien.com. Although, if you spell it wrong, I'm sure Google will help you out anyway. You can also follow her on Twitter, and that's CarWinB. On Twitter, and just type in Alexa O'Brien, should come right up on there too. Okay, great. So thanks for joining us on the show again, Alexa. Good to talk to you. First of all, you got the first interview with Bradley Manning's lawyer, Coombs. And I'm sorry I didn't get to watch the whole thing, but I saw a good portion of it anyway. They ran it on Democracy Now! At democracynow.com or .org. I was just wondering if we could start with the most important points from that interview that you picked up that you needed clarification on that you got from him, if you could.
Well, I think there were a couple. I mean, I do want to say this before I go into those, though. You know, you have to understand, for many of the reporters who've been covering this trial for, you know, 2 years at Fort Meade, 3 years since Manning's been arrested, there's been so many things that we've observed in the courtroom. We probably know the case better than anything else. And it was just great to finally sit down with David Coombs and also have the American public see, you know, from his own, mouth, so to speak, him talk about the things about the lack of damage, what kind of evidence the government was presenting. I think fundamentally what was really, really important about what David Coombs talked about yesterday with me after the sentence was exactly that, the lack of damage. Also, the role of the FBI and the State Department in the investigation and the prosecution of Bradley Manning, to also explain Bradley Manning's motive. Once again, this trial has been really conveyed through other people. So to have him speak about his own client, I think was all very, very important.
Right. Okay. Well, let's start with the lack of damage, because that's according to even the state's witnesses, correct?
Sure. So I was saying that the most important thing that David Coombs talked about was the fact of the lack of damage. And I asked him to characterize, you know, exactly what kind of evidence he got in the closed session. And he said, listen, what we heard in the closed session was no different than what we heard in the open session. It was speculative. It was testimony about people's opinions about what could happen. Like, for example, we had a guy from the Defense Intelligence Agency named Yousef Abu-Anayn, and he's supposed to be an al-Qaeda expert. And, he came into court and he testified that the releases could possibly be used in future al-Qaeda propaganda efforts. And when the judge actually asked Abu-Anayn when was the last time they had mentioned, Al-Qaeda had mentioned WikiLeaks, the witness said basically 2011. So that was one of the sort of portions of the interview. And then, of course, talking about also the role of the FBI and the State Department, I asked him the investigation and the prosecution of Manning was being directed by the National Security Council or the White House, and he said that while he didn't have evidence himself of that, I mean, and this is, of course, through I've asked these questions from defense's own discovery request early on in the trial, that certainly, there was no question there was a coordination amongst all the sort of alphabet soup agencies and more stuff. I mean, that extended interview is actually going to be viewable on the Democracy Now! Website, and then there's also an even longer interview with him that'll be up, I think, this evening on my website.
Okay, great. And again, that's AlexaO'Brien.com. And then, now, I don't know if you had a chance to hear, probably not, but I interviewed Morris Davis yesterday. I'm sure you probably talked with him at length in the past. But we went over what he called fertile grounds for appeal, quite a few of them. Is that your same interpretation of the trial you just witnessed here?
Absolutely. I mean, this trial has had so many problems with it. And Coombs, I mean, one of the things that was clear is that if you look at the court record, it's 40,000 pages long. There is a very, very long and strong court record as well, which is good for the appellate process.
So other than the big three, the abuse and the command influence and the speedy trial issues, which certainly have been gone over a lot of times on this show in the past, were there any other things, big missteps that you could point to by the prosecution or by the judges, her rulings during this case?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, the judge changed the charge sheet after the close of evidence. So you remember she asked for, she let the government equate databases to be records, to be information. So that certainly is an issue that can come up. Also, there are the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act charges, the whole idea of exceeding authorized access. No question that her interpretation of the CFAA, which has come under a lot of attention lately with the death of, the indictment of late and the death of Aaron Swartz, who was indicted with multiple CFAA accounts for downloading, you know, scholarly journals. And then we have Weave, who is actually sentenced to 3 years in federal prison for accessing information on a publicly available website. So similarly, you know, here Manning was using a classified network, but he had access. He didn't hack anything. And yet he was charged with the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act for the diplomatic cables, and he was convicted on one of them. What's interesting about the charge is that a couple things. The judge interpreted access to be that because it was a classified system, Manning's non-disclosure agreements were a form of sort of a, you had to exceed it, you know, by going through the, you know, over the non-disclosure agreement. That is a little weird. So that will actually be reviewed. And then also the issue of WGET, of using WGET to actually obtain the cables themselves. You know, WGET is a freeware program. You can get it online. It's not a hacking program. The government tried to insinuate somehow that it was. And the thing that's kind of controversial about WGET is that the government, their entire case was built on a non-existent acceptable use policy. So there's a couple things. All of the hard drives that were destroyed, except for Manning's, even though both the defense and the government requested preservation of them. And then on top of that, all the acceptable use policies for the 2nd Brigade Combat Team were destroyed, including Manning's, which the law enforcement agents that testified in this court case had actually, you know, sought early on in the investigation in Iraq. They all knew to preserve at least one from the 2nd Brigade Combat Team. So when you have an offense that, you know, at least the maximum is 10 years, you would hope that the government would have more than a non-disclosure agreement, especially if it's related to computer usage, because fundamentally the acceptable use policy is said to have prohibited the use of executable programs like WGET on classified systems. But, you know, when we look at the other hard drives, we would have seen soldiers, you know, also installing executable files on their hard drives as well, on their desktops, like WGET. And we have to remember there was a major information assurance breakdown in the 2nd Brigade Combat Team. It's not like Bradley Manning was, you know, somehow greatly distinguished in terms of just general usage. Fundamentally, there were soldiers playing movies on pirated DVDs that they purchased from Iraqi nationals at local markets on their classified systems. I mean, you want to talk about a security problem. So there's a lot more to this story than perhaps people are, have been aware of, or perhaps are capable of sort of, you know, gleaning from sort of high level pieces. But that'll definitely come up on appeal.
Right. Yeah, well, and especially I think their point was, wasn't it, that he had, you know, gone beyond the access that he was supposed to have in order to create this spreadsheet and get all this going. And then it turned out their own witness under cross-examination, his superior officer admitted that she had ordered him to create that database. It had nothing to do with helping them prove their theory that he had begun preparing to leak way back before he ever had his change of heart and decided to in his narrative.
That's right. I mean, you know, Manning was a young intelligence analyst, so he was often ordered to data mine the significant activity reports. The Computer Fraud and Abuse Act charges will, they pertain to the diplomatic cables, and they'll definitely come up on appeal. You know, the database issue of whether or not Manning took records, information, or actually the databases, and what, and the fact that the government was allowed to change their charge sheet, that'll definitely come up. And that relates also to the SIG Acts and the Iraq War Logs, the Afghan War Diary, and the Cablegate and stuff like that.
Yeah. All right. Now, and yeah, back to his motives. I wanted to ask you about the testimony of Adrian Lamo, because, or is it Lamo? I don't know. If it really is Lamo, I don't want to have been mispronouncing it this whole time, and let him go ahead and have that. But,
I think it's Lamo.
It's Lamo. Okay. And so now he was there, called as the prosecution witness, not just to testify to the facts that, yeah, I was participating in this chat log you're reading here, and I can testify to that being true and whatever, but he was there also to be a kind of character witness against the corruption and criminal intent of Bradley Manning, right?
Well, he was called as a motive witness at trial. I mean, back at the Article 32, back in 1852, no, I'm sorry, back in December 2012, because it's been such a long trial, you know, Lamo came and testified to the authenticity of the chat logs and the fact that he worked with law enforcement and where they got it and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we have to remember these chat logs are really, have really, were the map for the entire law enforcement investigation. I mean, the forensic work was guided by what was in the chat logs. And, you know, aiding the enemy and all, the government tried to use the chat logs in any and every way. So here it was interesting because defense actually took out all of the more commonly known sort of impeachments of Adrian Lamo, the fact that he was working with law enforcement, the fact that he framed Bradley Manning, and actually this spoke directly to motive. The things that Bradley Manning said in the chat log, which are like that he wanted to help other people, that he cared about other people, that he, you know, he did this for, you know, good intentions, and all of that was that to go to aiding the enemy, and then to also go to the reason to believe could cause injury to the United States, that part of the espionage charge. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, in a certain sense, in some ways, defense tried to extract what was most important from the chat log, that Manning had no intent to harm the United States.
Well, and it's notable too that it wasn't just that he said nice things; it was that. Lamo, I don't know if you can tell us whether this is before or after he had already started talking to the government about what was going on here, tried to tempt him with the dark side and said...
Let me say something really important about the Lamo chat logs. You know that first two sentences that are like, hi, you know, Lamo, 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 and then Bradley Manning goes, if you had access to unclassified networks, you know, however many times a day, what would you do? At that moment, that is the moment that Adrian Lamo went to law enforcement, according to his sworn testimony. So everything after that, which is pretty much the chat logs, Lamo was working with law enforcement.
Okay. So, and then I don't know if they put him up to this or not. Maybe it was his own idea, but I wouldn't give them the benefit of the doubt on that or anything. But he says to Manning, hey, why don't you sell these to the Russians or the Chinese? You could become a very rich man. And so it's not just that Manning had said, well, I'm doing this because I care about people, but the informant who had his trust, who told him, I'm a minister and a journalist, so you can double extra trust me and all of this stuff, told him, you know, tried to tempt him, and he responded basically with, what are you talking about? I would never do that. No, really, I just want to help.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
Anyway. But then, now the prosecutors, I saw where David Coombs, the lawyer, told you that they just overcharged him to the point of, we say they pushed the envelope, and sometimes went beyond it on every charge. But also with their rhetoric and their demonization of Bradley Manning as well, and trying to portray him as some kind of master criminal or some kind of very terrible person. They didn't even say, like, hey, listen, we know you meant well, but what you did was wrong. That was not their take. They wanted the judge to believe that Manning was this terrible criminal.
That's right. I mean, you know, and interestingly enough, I mean, we know from the court arguments that there are punitive articles under the Uniform Code of Military Justice that are have really harsh punishments for negligence. Like, I think one of them is, like, if you are supposed to be guarding, like, a sentinel and you, you know, are found to be drunk or disorderly, you know, there's grave punishment for that in the military. But the government didn't charge him that way. You know, the government really built their case on the fact that Manning was a bad person, intent to harm people, that he was working for WikiLeaks, that he was harvesting information, this kind of stuff. Hmm. They couldn't find anybody who would say that Bradley Manning was doing that, except for Jeriah Shoman, who was completely impeached and really honestly raised on the witness stand by the defense. I mean, they really just destroyed her testimony.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is where, after the defense got to put on their case, then the prosecution got to go again. Is this the witness you're talking about?
That's right. I mean, they really just brought her out a couple times. She was the supervisor. I mean, even though she was not much of a higher rank than Bradley Manning, but she was a supervisor of Bradley Manning, and she, you know, had even written good reports. She actually recommended him for Employee of the Month at one point. But, you know, Manning has filed an equal opportunity employment complaint against her, and that came out. They had actually had a long history of kind of just antagonism towards, or her antagonism towards Bradley. You know, she would talk about, you know, Bradley using the terms kind of like faggotry, and all this kind of other stuff came out. And she's the one who suddenly remembered a year and a half after Bradley Manning was arrested. This was never written down. And you have to understand, in the military, everything's reduced to writing. If you get counseled and it's good, you know, it's reduced to writing, because that's the way in which the chain of command can keep track of things. And fundamentally, she just remembered, like, a year and a half after Manning was arrested that, you know, oh, he said something about being disloyal to the U.S. government and he only joined the Army to go to college. And, you know, it's funny because in the back and forth on the stand with Shoman, defense brought up this sort of term of using the term faggotry. And she said, well, I think he misunderstood what I meant by that. And defense said, well, maybe you misunderstood what Bradley Manning said when he said that he didn't, you know, believe in blind allegiance to a flag, which is different than saying that you don't have allegiance to the American flag. You know, Manning was a very empathic person. I mean, he definitely is a kind person. You can tell that just by his behavior in court for the last, you know, 2 years.
Well, you know, it seems like when it comes to all the overcharging, pushing the envelope, as the defense attorney called it, it seems like they're sort of working the dialectic, right, where they're basically saying, listen, if we charge him with aiding the enemy, then at least you'll have to convict him under the Espionage Act. So if they had only charged him under the Espionage Act, then you'd only have to convict him of downloading too many documents in an unauthorized fashion. Or, you know what I mean? Compromise.
Absolutely. I mean, I will tell you something. It's a really important point that you're making. I mean, fundamentally, let's say we stripped all the federal violations out of his charge sheet. Your audience might have just, like, went to sleep when I said that. But let's say you take out all the espionage and you even take out all the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. You know, fundamentally, Bradley Manning would have been, you know, had a maximum sentence of 60 years, I think, is what I calculated at one point. You know, or even if it was 40 years, he's a 25-year-old man. So, like, you know, this is really, like, almost a life sentence. They really stacked it against him, and there's no access to the court records, so the press was always focusing on aiding the enemy, and wow, he got off of aiding the enemy, but he was only convicted on 6 other espionage charges. I mean, he really had this case stacked against him. The other thing that could come up on appeals, actually, interestingly enough, is the multiplication of charges. Like, Manning was charged with stealing the Iraq war log as well as, you know, espionage, and defense had, early on in the motion hearings, had said, like, listen, he took the Iraq war logs to communicate it. Like, why do we need to break this up into, you know, 3 charges? Why can't this just be 1 charge for the criminal act? So there are kinds of things like that that could come up on appeal.
Yeah. Well, and I think Colonel Morris said yesterday he still got, or maybe this was from your interview, Coombs said there's still, what, 4 other levels of appeal to go here. Oh, and it was Morris said yesterday, it can't ever be worse than this. This is the absolute maximum sentence he's ever getting from now on. It's all downhill from here.
Yeah, it was really devastating yesterday, you know, hearing that sentence. I think because defense had hoped that she would find some kind of reasonableness to what was going on. I do believe, though, that, you know, Manning is a kind of character, and I hate to turn him into a character, but because I know she's a human being, and I guess we need to refer to her as Chelsea, is such a strong character. And one of the most, I think, important characteristics of Manning is this being able to prevail despite circumstance. And I'm not talking about some kind of, you know, smarmy Hallmark card. I mean, Manning is the real deal. The earnestness that came through, especially, you know, in the last year of court where Manning was able to speak and have a statement, was really incredible. I'm saddened for us that Manning was convicted to 35 years. I am certainly, you know, aware of that, you know, it's not a great existence to be in a military prison. But I know that no matter what, Manning is strong enough to be able to handle whatever is in front of her. Because fundamentally, you know, this is about what's more important than simply, you know, putting things into doing the right thing.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. It's great to talk to you again, Alexa. I learned a lot again.
All right. Take care, man.
Appreciate it. Okay, not the best choice of bumper music for that that outro, but there you go. Alexa O'Brien, alexaobrien.com, and follow her on Twitter. Search Alexa O'Brien. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, all, Scott here, hawking stickers for the back of your truck. They've got some great ones at LibertyStickers.com. Get your son killed, Jeb Bush, 2016. FDR, no longer the worst president in American history. The National Security Agency, blackmailing your congressman since 1952. And USA, sometimes we back Al-Qaeda, sometimes we don't. And there's over 1,000 other great ones on the wars, police state, elections, the Federal Reserve, and more at LibertyStickers.com. They'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at TheBumperSticker.com. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new project, Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. They've got 2 new audiobooks read by the deepest voice in libertarianism, the great historian Jeff Riggenbach. Our Last Hope, Rediscovering the Lost Path to Liberty by Michael Meharry of the 10th Amendment Center is available now. And Beyond Democracy, co-authored by Frank Karsten of the Mises Institute Netherlands and journalist Carl Beckman, will be released this month. And they're only just getting started. So check out listenandthink.com. You may be able to get your first audiobook absolutely free. That's Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here for TheBumperSticker.com. I created it but quickly sold to Rick so I could do this instead. In the decades since, he's made one hell of a great company. TheBumperSticker.com makes digitally printed, photo-quality, full-color bumper stickers for your band or your business, as well as magnets, adhesive vinyl decals, and labels for products and industrial use and your political cause or campaign, too. TheBumperSticker.com also offers full custom graphic design for bringing your idea to reality. Let TheBumperSticker.com help you get the word out. That's TheBumperSticker.com at TheBumperSticker.com. And tell them you heard it here.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for Rocky Mountain Miners at RockyMountainMiners.com. Ever wanted to destroy the Federal Reserve System? Now's your chance. New free market currencies are making our fake government money a thing of the past, and good riddance. If you want to mine new bitcoins and litecoins into circulation, you need a computer set up to crack the codes to the new coins. Get the Prospector from RockyMountainMiners.com. It's ready to do the work right out of the box. Crack the equations, spend the money. Use promo code Scott Horton Show and save $100. Get all the info and get the Prospector at RockyMountainMiners.com.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Braswell Business Communication Services at FusePowder.com. Braswell Communications can provide a credentialed media presence for your company at industry conferences and trade shows, as well as support services and consultation for publishing, editorial and technical writing, business-to-business and marketing communications, research, and information campaigns. Braswell also does website development and complete web content maintenance to include voiceover audio and copywriting. Strengthen your business. FusePowder.com.